AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Chevron USA Incorporated versus Natural Resources Defense Council. Date, 1984. A landmark case in which the Supreme Court set forth a legal test for determining whether to grant deference to a government agency's interpretation of a statute which it administers. I welcome Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution writing about the Chevron case here in the 21st century because of a recent decision by the Supreme Court to hear an argument which it will decide on a new case that has many of the dimensions of the original Chevron case. The report from Roll Call: the Supreme Court will decide a challenge over how courts assess federal rulemaking, setting up a major case for its next term that could change the balance of power between executive agencies, Congress, and the judiciary. The case is known as Loper Bright Enterprises et al. Versus Raimondo. Richard, Professor, a very good evening to you. The Chevron case you've mentioned over the years as critical to understand the administrative state. How so? What is the administrative state in light of the 1984 decision? Good evening to you.
Okay, well, first of all, I think it's very important to distinguish between the administrative state in its modern incarnation and the administrative state which has been with us from the beginning of time. There is no question that every government has to have a system to record and organize its affairs. You need tax rolls, you need voting rolls, you need property rolls, you need all sorts of things for motor vehicle licenses and so forth. And the early administrative state, what it did is it organized large numbers of very, very small individual cases and disputes and ran them through the agency. The modern administration state does something very different. What it does is it takes huge questions, very few of them, each of them with enormous importance, and then has to get an administrative rule which decides whether you can or cannot do this. And so in the Chevron case, what the rule was, it's a debate over when you have smokestack. Is each smokestack a separate source for the purposes of the environmental regulation? Or is the entire plant with many smokestacks to be treated as one? And if you treat the whole plant as a single unity, there's much more flexibility in shifting the waste from one tower to another tower while staying within the rule. But if you treat each smokestack as a separate entity, then the ability for the plant to reorganize its affairs is going to be much more compromised. So then you say, well, how do you decide this? Well, what they do is they talk about point sources. But this is not points in the sense of geometry, where you have a point which has no area and no volume. It's a point in the sense that a smokestack is a point, even though it's 3 feet wide, and a plant may be several, 50, 100 feet wide. They're kind of point sources. So the question is, which of these two things do you need? Now, the traditional way of doing this was to look very hard at the particular statute and the practice under it to figure out whether it was the broad or the narrow meaning. The newer view under Chevron is that what we do is we defer to the agency on whether we take the full plant or the individual stack and treat it as a unit, because we really quite don't know what it's doing. To understand this historically, Chevron was basically an effort to rein in the courts in the way in which they viewed these stacks. The opinion below was written by then Judge Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and her attitude was, I looked at this thing, there's something wrong with the motivation, and I'm going to strike the whole thing down. So she had a very aggressive attitude, which essentially was designed to prevent the propagation and the use of smokestacks and therefore fossil fuels. So what Justice Stevens did was he gave the administration the doubt. Now, it turns out, if you remember, this is around 1984, and the rules took place slightly before. So there's a real battle between the Carter administration on the one hand and the Reagan administration on the other. And what the Chevron case does is it says we can now have flip-flops. We can have the Carters doing it one way, and then we can have the Reagan people doing it another way. Each follows their own expertise. And by the time we're done with all of this, we will have inconsistent rules. Then the question is just how far can that discretion be exercised? And, you know, this is a very tricky sort of question. They say it can only be questioned when things are ambiguous. But the term ambiguous is itself somewhat ambiguous. And there's some cases which I would regard as reasonably clear or perfectly clear, which other people will not. And so what then happens is the discretion becomes just enormous. So to give you an idea of the scope of this discretion, you're trying to figure out what you mean by the phrase navigable waters of the United States. On one version, it means dredge and fill permits inside the water body. And you take on the other, anything that feeds into a natural body of water, a piece of land that could be even 1 mile or 5 miles away, can be regarded as part of the thing. And so you have jurisdictional implications that are a thousandfold difference in the size. And that's, of course, what happened in the famous West Virginia case, which is already a major landmark in the law, because on the one view, best systems of emission reduction means that you could put a baffle around the plant so as to quiet it, or it could mean you have to substitute across the entire economy a system of solar and wind energy to replace fossil fuels. And the Supreme Court said you can't give administrative discretion on that kind of an issue. Now, when we get to this particular case, what happens is we're at a kind of inflection point. The way it went in the West Virginia case is it was only big cases which would take away administrative discretion and require clear congressional authorization. But what about all these medium-sized cases? Are we supposed to use a different rule for them and then have to figure out what's major and what's not so major? Well, the particular case that you talked about, Loper, if you've ever seen the Money Coda, the movie Coda, about deaf people and so forth, it had to do with the question of having inspectors on board shipping boats. And it is, everybody understands that the government could require you to have somebody on board to make sure that you don't fish illegally because of the huge problem of overcapture. But in this particular case, the government kind of ran out of money. So it says, we're going to put them on the boat. And what happens is now you, old members of the boat, have to pay for it. And the question is, did or did not Congress authorize this? And it's just very difficult to say. And so what you do is you get all sorts of opinions. What you get is a district court opinion that the general authorization to make sure that safe fishing is safe and effective gives you the power to force them to pay. Then you get to the District of Columbia Circuit Court, and they say, well, it's ambiguous. You get a dissent in that opinion. They said, no, it's not ambiguous. The background norm is always that you have to have a specific authorization for any budgetary expenditure. There's none in this statute, so it's perfectly clear you can't do it. Well, it comes to the Supreme Court, and you could argue it one of two ways. You could say it's an issue of discretion, to be sure, but in this case, they got the balance wrong. Or you can say the whole thing is just misguided, and we don't want any Chevron anymore. Generally speaking, it turns out that Democratic lawmakers tend to be more in favor of Chevron than the Republican ones, because they generally have more ambitious plans for the way in which the system is operated. And if, in fact, Chevron is tossed and we go back, then there's no major questions doctrine anymore. Then everything is just a question of de novo judicial review of any question of law that comes out of these facts, which is what on its face the Administrative Procedure Act of 1946, Section 706, seems to require. So my guess is that they actually will overturn it because it's not textually defensible. And then what you'll discover is whether or not you have an administrative agency, they're always going to be close cases.
Want to understand this. The Magnuson-Stevens Fishery Conservation and Management Act of 1976 requires fishermen, in this case family-owned fisheries, to validate that they are correctly fishing, not overfishing, by providing space for an inspector on their boat, on their fishing trips. That's the first requirement. But because the National Marine Fisheries Service says that it does not have the money to pay for putting one of its people on your boat, you have to pay for it. Now, Richard, in common language, that's changing the rules. The rule change has nothing to do with whether the fishermen are doing things right or wrong. It has to do with a budgetary matter back in Washington that it's not common sense to say, because our budget changed, you have to pay for it.
Well, John, I think you're right. I think a lot of people think you're right. And if it's just common sense, as you put it, then the decision is going to be overturned. If it turns out you say no, What's really going on here is we have a basic norm, and then we always give some discretion to the administrative agency on how to enforce it. To which your answer, I'm going to be Mr. Batchelor for a second, that can tell you just, you know, where you put this guy on the boat, but it doesn't allow you to make an appropriation to charge him. The way I put it in the thing is, suppose somebody says, look, we're really out of money in Washington. What you're going to charge you is not only for keeping the guy on the boat, but you're going to have to pay $150 surcharge in order for us to maintain the offices out in the various field. Could you do that as well? The answer is the problem that the deference people have is they have enough deference to get this case, but they don't have a limiting principle, which essentially means that this body could possibly do anything on the financial side. And as you said, that's not the way it works. And the very able dissent of Judge Walker in that case said, look, generally speaking, an administrative agency is only endowed with the resources that the Congress gives to it. If they haven't had a clear authorization, then it's clear that the case goes the opposite way. So essentially, there are two different presumptions. One is that the delegated authority is broad enough to let you do whatever you want. And the other is it requires a specific authorization in accordance with traditional principles of administrative law. And I think that they took this case because they're going to reverse Chevron. There's more and more discontent with that. It leads to genuinely lawless kinds of decisions. And what happens is judges now search for ambiguity in a particular statute, which will more or less let the agency do what they want. There is no argument, as far as I'm concerned, that agencies have a better view of statutory construction than do judges, who do it all the time. And there's the real danger that these so-called experts have built-in biases about the expansion of their own jurisdiction, and that they're essentially going to be less faithful interpretation than a neutral court, which doesn't have an axe to grind one way or another.
Does this involve administrative judges the way we've talked about before? In other words, the agency has vouchsafes its own decision by turning to one of its own choices?
It basically covers both Article III courts and administrative law courts inside the agency. And the latter is subject to yet another problem, which is not with the courts, which is the appointment process of these agencies, when it's done by the agency itself, is essentially rife with risk. They appoint people to these panels in many cases whom they will know will come out their way. But the SEC, it's legendary. They have one guy they go to all the time, and he's ruled in favor of the government agency 99% of the time. And it turns out if somebody wants to challenge that, they have to go back before the agency. And then if that moves, then they have to go to court. And we had the discussion just a couple of weeks ago, on whether or not you can have a jurisdictional challenge before you have to be shredded to bits by one of these administrative
courts. Well, the agency could charge the boat owner for the judge that they went to get a decision that validated the agency's decision. Where could the charges stop? You could charge them for the electricity in the office that made the decision you have to pay. There's no limit to this.
That's what I said. I mean, essentially what happens is there's no limiting principle that allows the authorization of this particular charge that doesn't ban all other charges. So once this is there, you can allocate the entire cost of this thing there. So now you have the new thing. Somebody says, look, we got all this money in the budget, but we'd like to use it for climate change research. So we're going to put the entire cost of this thing top to bottom on all the boats, and many of them will be driven out of business. So then you get, in addition to all the takings issue, maybe not in this case, but surely in the next, the question as to whether or not the fees are so onerous that it turns out that the legislation is confiscatory. And so you'll be right back to the due process confiscation issues that one hopes to avoid in administrative law. So I regard this as a very worrisome precedent, because I do respect, as I think is the basic decision, is that all appropriations and expenditures have to be originated in Congress. And I don't think Congress could be said, hey, you make sure that these things are safe, that delegates the budgetary issues to the other guys, given that budgetary matters in Congress are handled in a very different way, which can't be respected if you put it out to the agency. So I'm going to appoint you as a new member of the Supreme Court so you could hope to vote to enter the Chevron case. I have been against it since the beginning of my professional career. At one time, I was a more lonely voice. But now I think it's not only Republicans, but there are a lot of people, kind of neutrals or even conservative Democrats, who realize the inherent danger of lawlessness and abuse that comes when you allow somebody to declare a statute ambiguous and then to do precisely what he wants whenever he or she pleases.
Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution, a senior fellow, teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.